Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Tom Daly, and this is Made With Love. As a pro diver, I thought I knew all about making the thing you love the thing you do. But en route to the Olympic podium, I found a new passion outside of the pool that helped me unlock my power within it. That passion was knitting. And you may think this sounds bonkers, but I believe knitting made me an Olympic champion. I've since swapped swimming trunks for slip stitches, pikes for patterns, and chlorine for cables. Knitting is a huge part of my life now, and I'm determined to help others do more of what they love too. So each week, a brilliant guest will be joining me to talk about turning passion into purpose, how they've made the thing they love a central part of what they do, and crucially, what lessons they've learned along the way. Hi, it's Tom Daly here. Welcome back to Made With Love. Now, people use the term inspiration a lot, especially when it comes to athletes. But my guest today is truly inspiring. Like many talented young swimmers, Yusra Mardini dreamed of representing her home country of Syria on the biggest sporting stage of all, the Olympics. But as the war there intensified, she and her sister Sarah were forced to leave and seek safety in Europe. During their traumatic 25-day journey to Germany, the sisters literally had to swim for their lives when the small boat they were traveling in began to take on water far out at sea. At this point, survival was simply the main objective, but Yusra never gave up on her Olympic dream, and despite everything, she found a way to do the thing she loved and kept swimming. Now, she is a two-time Olympian, having swam in Rio and Tokyo for the refugee Olympic team. She's become a powerful voice for refugees all around the world, and her life is now the subject of a film called The Swimmers, which you might have already seen on Netflix. And Yusra joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on Made With Love.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I firstly just want to say, having watched The Swimmers, for anyone who hasn't seen it, I was completely blown away by the sheer bravery, determination, the guts. Like, there was so much that no one should ever have to go through, and you still managed to keep going and never give up hope. And I just want to say how admirable that is, first of all. But I kind of want to start right from the beginning, really. What was your first memory of being in a swimming pool?
Oh god, I don't think it was a good one. Like, when I was, so my whole family comes, like all of them were swimmers, like my uncle and my dad and so on, and they didn't have the chance to become, you know, professional swimmers because of the circumstances. Like, in Syria, professional sport is not taken very seriously, and my dad was determined to make us all three of his daughters swimmers. And I hated it, to be honest. I was running away from the pool all the time. I was cold. I was crying. One thing that I remember was hiding under my mom's chair all the time.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. But it kind of makes sense because your dad was also your coach, right?
Yeah.
That must have been intense around the dining table when you were having dinner. I bet swimming was just the talk all the time, because I know there's a couple of divers that have their parents that are coaches, and that happens all the time at dinner.
Yeah, my mom like got bored of the conversation basically every day and went and did something else, because what you see in the movie is real. Like, when my dad was making me sit down and watch Michael Phelps' technique every time he had a competition, that was true. And I was very annoyed, like at the time, because I was young. And when I went to another coach, I realized why he did that. And I realized that he was doing the professional thing, the right thing. Obviously, at one point, it was a lot because on weekends, you would see us doing dry land and like core workouts and so on. And my mom was like, just give them one day. But I think in the beginning, when I started swimming, I was swimming for my dad's dream and not mine. I didn't realize that it's my dream until I was 15, to be honest. I obviously wanted to go to the Olympics, but it was always like, I was a little bit afraid of my dad along the way because I wanted to make him proud all the time. And I was just struggling between, oh, is this my dream or his? And then when I was 15, I left swimming for a whole year because of war and because he left the country. He left the country and he went to Jordan to coach. And I left the swimming because I was supposed to go to the Youth Olympic Games and the coaches decided that someone else is going. And I wanted a competition between me and her because I knew I was faster and they told me that's not going to happen. And I was like, okay, I'm done with sport. Like, it's not fair. I can't do this. And then I stopped. And at that point, I realized that I do love swimming so much. And that was not the end for me. I was like, oh God, like, what am I going to tell my kids? I don't want to just let it go. And that wasn't me. Like, I don't just leave things. So I was sobbing when like the Syrian team, they won some medal in relay. And I was like, oh my God, I'm faster than that girl. Why am I not there? And then I started crying and I went to my mom and I was like, Mom, I should have been there. And then she's like, call your dad. If he says you can go back to swimming, you can. They both said yes. And they said it's 1000% your responsibility, everything that happens with swimming from now on. I was like, okay. And I went back.
It gets to that point, doesn't it? Where you just feel like you can't do it anymore. And it's like, you know what? I'm done with swimming and I just want to go away from it. Like, how did it feel when you returned?
To be honest, I had so many challenges when I came back. I had the challenge of, you know, when you leave, I did not take care of my body after I left. I just left. I had a clean break. I was like, I do not want to get to the pool at all anymore. I don't want to see it. I was very hurt. So when I came back, I had to do a lot of training. My mom would like shout at me because I would sleep with my backpack sometimes because I was so tired. Like, that's how determined I was to like get back to the top. And it felt nice because it's my home in the end. But in general, people were like, oh, why did she come back now? Like, she left for the whole year. The younger girls are now faster than her. And I worked so hard until, you know, I had the last competition, I think a week before I left Syria to Germany. And I was again the fastest swimmer in my age. And I was the second fastest swimmer in Syria. I was like, okay, I can leave now.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, were there any other factors in stepping back from the sport?
Yeah, to be honest, like, I had so much respect for my dad. And when he left, I rebelled a bit. Like, I just got a piercing without telling my mom. I cut my hair short. And my mom couldn't really control me. Like, she was very kind and she did everything for us. But like, I had a way better relationship with my dad. And I was hurt because I left swimming. I was hurt that my dad left, and like, I didn't feel protected in swimming anymore because he was always fighting for us. So I started like going out, hanging out with people that do not have any dreams or ambitions. I started like doing things that I was like, what am I doing? Like, the main focus of my life is just going to school and then getting back and gossiping about people. Like, and I was like, that's not me. Like, I have a bigger purpose. And I realized that my role in the world can be way bigger than just like going out every Thursday, because our Friday is Thursday in Syria. So.
Was there like a moment that you saw an Olympic Games, for example, that made you think, you know what, I want to go to the Olympics? Other than the times that your dad said that you need to go to the Olympics because I want all of my daughters to go to the Olympics.
I never talked about this before. I always say that it's like Michael Phelps, but there's one moment. She's now my friend, but she has been my idol, and she's not way older than me, like I thought she is, Katie Ledecky. There is this cute picture of her taking a picture with Michael Phelps as a fan and then posing with him with her gold medals. And I was like, oh my God, like, that is so inspiring. And I, at the time, I also swam like 800, 400 and so on. And she was a huge inspiration for me. Michael Phelps, obviously, I think seeing and like watching how he struggled, how he was very, very open with his struggles when he was talking about, you know, mental health as well. It inspired me a lot along the way to see, okay, this guy is not getting tired. He's getting gold over gold over gold. And I did also know you. You're very young as well. I know your story. You're also very inspiring. So there are so many people in the sport that inspired me, to be honest. And there is a Swedish swimmer as well, Therese Alshammar. She also, I loved her as well. So there were lots of swimmers. But I think the moment was Kari Ledecky's baby pig, like her being a kid and having a photo as a fan with Michael Phelps, and then them being teammates and her wearing gold. I'm like, oh my God, that's a fairy tale.
It is crazy, because when you see someone that inspires you and you have that moment, I have moments like that in my diving career when I've met Greg Louganis, who is an incredible diving athlete, and even Leon Taylor within Team GB. I have those photos as a fan, and then you're like, oh my gosh, like one day I want to be able to do that. And they always say, don't meet your heroes. But I do think in sport, it really does help inspire you. And, you know, everybody has a difficult road to getting to the Olympic Games, but your journey to the Olympic Games is one for the record books. And like, how difficult was it for you to pursue your Olympic dreams in Syria at the time when the conflict was raging all around?
Oh gosh, I think at that point when the war happened, you can't imagine how many times I prayed to be at the Olympics and like manifested it. And it was so far away. We have the holy month in our religion, Ramadan, and there's like one night that is supposed to be like very holy and you can wish for anything or like pray for anything. And at that day I prayed that I would be at the Olympics, and it happened 2 years later, so like it's astonishing to me. But in general it was very difficult, because at that time I didn't have the equipment. Sometimes there were bombings that were happening, whether in the pool, whether in the football fields. You weren't safe. Sometimes they would just call you, and then my mom would call us when we were at school, and she would be like, do not come back right now because the streets are not safe. Sometimes we'd be in the car with my mom, and there will be like a bomb attack, and my mom has to drive as fast as possible. We were renting an apartment every 6 months, a different one, because the one before was getting expensive. Sometimes I was living by my grandma. Sometimes I was by my aunt. Also, you have to remember that there's cottage of electricity, water. There's no heating. You're just fighting for the basic human rights that everyone should have. And the situation is not better right now. It's exactly the same. But on top of that, there are refugees that are still in camps. Especially, I know that the majority of refugees are minors. So that's like, it's really heartbreaking. But yeah, in terms of my career, nothing. I was ready in no way, to be honest, to participate at the Olympics. And when I got to Germany, I met this incredible coach. And I was like, basically my dad believed already I'll go to the Olympics since I was very young. I don't know why. And my coach, the coach that I met in Germany, when I met him, he was like, what are your dreams for swimming? I was like, I want to go to the Olympics. He was like, but you just got here. I was like, yeah, but I want to go to the Olympics. And the aim was Tokyo 2020, actually. It wasn't
really
at the time. Yeah.
Wow. Because you arrived in Germany just before the Rio Olympics, right? It was quite close,
yeah,
in terms of training time.
Yeah, it was late 2015. So we got there in September. We were 25 days on the way. The whole time we were on the way, you saw from the movie a little bit that we slept on the floor, like in the gardens or the parks, because you can't show your passport when you're crossing. So I was really not ready. And at the time, I started training 3 times a day just to feel like to be mentally ready, even if I'm not physically ready. And I did struggle with even saying, okay, I want to go because I deserved it. They also have that in the movie where lots of people asked, was that like real? And it is real. I did struggle with like being called a refugee. I did struggle with saying, oh, did I earn my spot at the Olympics or not? Like, I don't want to talk about my story. I don't want to be at the Olympics because of my story, because it has been a dream of mine since I was 9. So I don't want to ever look back and be like, did I deserve it or not? So it was, yeah, struggle a bit.
I think being an Olympian has so many different layers to it of how much you have to work to get there, how few people ever get there. And just having watched your journey to even be able to, first of all, survive the journey to Germany and then be able to work hard to get to the Olympics, you are exactly what Olympic spirit is. That hard work, that determination, that never giving up, never quitting. It's so important that people see like how hard it is to work, to train, but then when you add all of the layers that you had to deal with to get there, it's incredible. And you were talking about training three times a day just to be able to escape. Is that something that you use swimming for, and especially used to being able to just go in and get away from everything?
Yeah. That's one thing that my dad taught me since I was very young. First of all, whenever we're at the pool, I'll be like, "Hey, Dad." He's like, "Don't call me Dad. Here, I'm your coach." And home, he called me Dad. I was like, "Okay." And I was very young, like I was like maybe 5, and that was really, really good because he taught us something since we were very young, and it is, you know, to once you're at the pool, you think about your goals. You know, in the pool, what do you want to do as an athlete? You're here to train, to push to the limits and be able to let everything go. What happens outside of the pool has nothing to do with the pool. Once you enter, I think you know that better than me even. But in general, once I was at the pool, it helped me a lot. Like, you know, sometimes you're frustrated and you can get that out in training because you're swimming fast. And whenever I was frustrated with my dad, as example, I would swim faster than anyone just because I was like, you know, I'm still the best swimmer you have.
Yeah.
But yeah, in general, it helped me a lot. Like whenever I was frustrated, sometimes you, even at training, not a lot of people know that, but swimmers cry also sometimes while swimming and no one knows about it. But it also helps. And sometimes while you have a hard set, you cry about both what's happening outside of the water and the hard set. And I feel like it helps. Like it is a type of therapy as well. But yeah, I did learn that at a very, very young age to split what's happening outside of the pool, inside of the pool. And when I got to Germany, I knew that swimming is going to help me meet new people, feel like home again. And that's exactly what happened.
And before you made that decision to go to Germany, it must have been an incredibly hard decision to make to leave members of your family. I mean, there was that incredibly heartbreaking scene with your younger sister. And, you know, like, what was it that finally pushed you to think, we need to go now?
It was my older sister. She's been a bit wilder than me since we were young. And she's the reason I speak English. She's the reason I was probably a good swimmer. And in general, she came up with the idea. She was like, you know, all of our friends are leaving and I think it's time for us to leave too because of everything that was happening. We try to distract ourselves from like the war that's happening and everything. And in the end, I was 17 and she's 3 years older than me. And at the time, you're supposed to have the best time of your life and not be, you know, stuck in a war. And at the time, she knew that I was the only one that can convince my dad. So I talked to him and I told him, hey, I think it's time for us to leave. Everyone's leaving. They're getting safely to Germany. It's obviously it's a risk, but I'd rather take the risk one time than every day in my life. Like, and it's the same for my mom, my dad, and so on. It wasn't easy. We asked him so many times, him and my mom, and they said no. And one time we asked him, and I think he gave up. And he was like, yeah, find someone I can trust, and you can go with them. And then at the time, my sister saw my cousin again. She was working at a store, and then he came by and he said, yeah, we're going to Germany. So it was the opposite of the movie. He came and then we saw him, we told him we're going, and then they came with us, like two cousins of my dad came with us, and that's how it happened. But it took a long time, yeah, and it was so many events that led to that point. As I mentioned, the cottage of electricity, water, you don't have enough money to have food on the table. You don't have a normal life. Every time you leave the door, your house door, you don't know if you're coming back. My mom would like cry almost every day because she doesn't know if we would be safe or not. But life still had to go on. Like you still had to leave the house and go do your work or go do your training, go to school. So people were trying to normalize it as much as possible, but it was just difficult and unbearable. Like, it was like you're living every day, but you're just living. You're not living for anything. You're just trying to survive day by day. That's it.
And like you said, it took nearly 4 weeks to get to Germany. And when you and Sarah were leaving, did you have any kind of plan of how you're going to actually get to Germany?
When you're in Syria, you know already you're going by boat. It's impossible to go by land. Yes. It's very, very rare to go by land. And 99% of refugees know already they're going by sea. And I think in the movie they showed it because people do struggle a lot between both ways, because some people have phobia from water, some people are scared to be on a boat, and we all saw what's happening in the sea for so many people. Some of them make it, some of them don't. That's why this scene is in the movie, because they want to show that people do not want to go by sea. And if they had an easier way where they can just walk through the border, they would do it as well. But yeah, no, the borders walking, it was very hard. Someone with us did it and he was pushed back. So it was kind of, we were talking about it. It's not like we weren't, we were talking about it, but we knew already, me and my sister, that we're going to go by sea because we didn't think there's a chance. But my parents in general, they trusted us with the whole process and they couldn't really do much. Everything changes step by step. Like, you have to make decisions so quickly and so spontaneously. You have to trust a smuggler in the same minute. You have to say, okay, I'm going with you. Here's my money. And for you to risk your life, literally, to get on a boat that might sink. So that's exactly what we did, to be honest. You see, okay, where's the majority of people going? You just go with them. It's not about being smarter than anyone. It's not about a plan. It's just about you thinking, okay, a lot of people are going from here. Is it smart to go or not? So yeah, you just look and then take the next step very spontaneously. And I think we were very, very lucky. And we say we were very, very lucky because we had a group with us that we met in Turkey on the shore before going on the boat. And one family had a baby. And this baby, she was months, like I think 3 months old. And one thing that broke my heart is that she had a necklace. And in the necklace, they had a paper with all the numbers of people they knew in case they did not make it and she does. Yeah. And we said that she was our guardian angel and that whenever we went, she was with us. So they crossed, they're fine, they're in Germany. But when we crossed, whenever they went, we went with them. And we really believed that the baby was our guardian angel, to be honest.
Like, I remember in that scene in particular, when you are on that boat and seeing how a baby, an infant so young, is having to go through the same situation as everyone on that boat. Everyone wants a better life for themselves. And at a certain point, it started to take on water. And I believe it was your sister, Sarah, that went in, and then you followed suit and also got in the water and had to swim alongside the boat.
Yeah. After like 15 minutes, the motor started to not work and then work again. And then the first person actually that jumped to the water was a friend of my dad. He was with us as well. So he jumped for like 2 minutes. And then when he went back, he kind of managed everyone. He said like, okay, 4 people need to go to the water. My sister was the first one to jump. She jumped from one side. I jumped from the other side and she was shouting at me, just like in the movie. She was scared because I have a history of passing out if I have so much pressure. And she was scared that this will happen to me in the water because I wear glasses and I, as a swimmer, I did have a lot of problems with my ears as well at a younger age. So whenever I had so much pressure, I felt like I did something bad, or I talked to my parents about it and then my dad was mad, I would just lose my conscience. So she was scared that would happen to me. And then 2 other people jumped from the back, and it wasn't like in the movie. There was no rope around our stomachs. And we tried to, there's a rope around the dinghy. And we tried, we put one hand here and we tried to swim with the other. Because obviously also we had our clothes on. We didn't have our swimming stuff. We tried to stabilize the boat down because It was windy. At the time when we started, it was 7:30 in the evening. So that time the water changes, the weather changes, it starts being windy. So it was very difficult. The boat was ripped before we used it. That's also you can see in the movie. So that was the big problem. It wasn't full of air, and the water started in, so we had to throw everything we had with us. And some of the people tried to take the water out with the shoes. And it took us 3 hours and a half until like we got to shore. The last 15 minutes I got back on the boat. My sister stayed in the water the whole time. But yeah, it was supposed to be 45 minutes. Like the distance wasn't so crazy. Like as a swimmer, you can do it. But it was heartbreaking to us knowing the majority on the in the boat did not know how to swim because the distance was 5 or 10K. Like it wasn't that crazy of a distance.
Wow. I mean, you must have been terrified about passing out in that situation. And like, what was going through your head when you were having to battle the waves and battle the wind and worry about keeping everyone safe on the boat at the same time?
Honestly, I can't even remember, to be honest. I remember one of the things that like is engraved in my memory is me seeing, like just looking at the island and seeing the mini lights, but never reaching there. That was one of like it did break my heart, and I was just thinking probably like what a shame, like what did we do to be here? That's one of the things that I always ask myself, but we just had survival instincts. We're just trying to survive literally the whole time. And I was very young. I was like 17 at the time. So we were really just thinking about surviving. We were all praying as well. Like at the same time, we were praying. So yeah, that's mostly what it was.
How did you even manage to stay so hopeful? Like, was there anything from your history in sport that was like, you know, I have to keep going against all odds?
I think honestly, that's the only thing you can do when you're fighting for your life. I think being an athlete, of course, helped me and my sister. My dad being so strict also helped us. My mom being so kind and gentle also helped us. I think it's the life experience that we had. And honestly, I always think about it, and I say I would do it again. And knowing if I know that there are people on the boat that needed my help, I would do it. I honestly was scared as well because they knew that I was a swimmer, and I did my lifeguard license, me and my sister, so we know what type of panic people have when they're drowning. So I was also scared of dying. I was also scared of someone pulling me down with them or trying to survive and taking me down. So lots of things were going on. I don't think I was 100% brave. We were trying to be. But I think we were scared of many, many things. And I think sport helped because of the experience with the water, because of knowing exactly what's going to happen. And because we don't give up easily, me and my sister. We're a bit stubborn. And I think that's a really, really good quality. So I think that helped us. The most thing that helped us is the way my parents raised us, definitely.
And it must have been so difficult as well to watch back and actually have to almost relive it in a cinematic sense as well, because with the music added, the all of the flashbacks, the you know, throwing the medals in, like there's so many scenes that really must have, like, how was that watching that back?
Honestly, it was. I watched the movie 3 times already, and this scene, if the hardest part for me is not watching what happened to us, the hardest part for me is knowing that there were people that did not make it, and that there are people that are still going through those journeys until today and being pushed back when they arrive. So, in general, when we watched the movie, me and my sister, we cried, we laughed, we cried again. It was emotional. And when the movie finished, like for the first time, we knew exactly why we're sharing the story. We wanted people to know what's happening with refugees around the world. We wanted people to have empathy and understand that we are normal. Like I'm just like you. I'm just trying to survive. I have a dream. I want to be an Olympic swimmer. And I don't come from nothing. Like I did have a normal life. I loved my country, but I was forced to leave because of war and violence. And it made me so emotional because I know my story, obviously, and I know what happened in my life, but I don't wake up every day and think about it. And having it all in like 2 hours. I'm like, oh my God, I did go through all of that. Like, it's crazy. So yeah, it is definitely emotional, but it also made us really proud to watch and see what we did, and that people also really hopefully understand and know that they can help a lot of refugees around the world. By the way, one thing, the medal scene, I cried my eyes out for it, but not because it did happen. Obviously, it would have been a little bit stupid for me to take my medals with me, but I did lose my medals in the war. The last time I saw my home was before I left for a competition in Russia. I went and I had a competition in Russia, and that was the last time. I couldn't re-enter my house ever again. So all I had was a big bag with my swimming stuff mostly, and some, national team gear, and that's it. All of my medals were back home, and our house was destroyed. It broke my heart when I saw like all the medals drowning, and I'm so glad that the scene is there, because I think all of us as athletes, like looking at that, like probably felt a little bit of a heartache.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I mean, it's just an incredible, and I can't say enough how important it is for people to watch and give that level of understanding of what it's like to flee for your life and still have a dream and still push for that. And one thing I found incredibly moving about the film as well were the relationships that you built throughout your journey, the people you met along the way, the bonds that you had with those people that were showing, lots of kindness. And like, did that bring you any comfort at all along the way?
Yeah, meeting the people on the way, it was honestly what helped us survive. We were sharing. If we had like one biscuit, we would like cut it in 50 pieces. So each one of us has something to eat. When we had water and they didn't, we gave them water. There's a picture of us walking on the train track and my sister holding the baby as an example. Like, she was, sometimes we were taking roles of like taking care of the baby as well. So in general, honestly, meeting them was such a bless, and we were lucky to meet them, because you don't always meet good people, especially on the way. So yeah, we were definitely lucky, and we know now that most of them are safe, and they are in Germany, in different cities, but most of them are in Germany and Sweden.
I mean, it is so incredible to see like so many people coming together in such adversity and such tough conditions. And then when you finally got to Germany, you met your coach. How was that going into a pool and being like, we want to swim? Like, how did it all go?
I'm not gonna lie to you, I didn't have the confidence you see in the movie. I knew exactly what I wanted. Like, I didn't tell him like, who are you? But we did, like, I did know exactly what I want, and my dad gave me so much confidence and experience, and I'm thankful for that. So when we went there, we really did not have swimsuits, because obviously, where would I get a swimsuit? We went to our translator in the camp, in the refugee camp, and we were like, hey, we are professional swimmers. We would love to swim. Do you know any swimming clubs nearby? He was like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I did competitions for like the national team. He was like, yeah, some athletes were saying they're athletes, but they weren't. I was like, okay, makes sense. And then like we went, and they did a test, and then we swam, and the coach was so fascinated by our technique. which my dad worked on his whole life. And obviously he made me watch Michael Phelps for a reason. But yeah, no, he was so fascinating. He was like, did you ever train in Canada or America? And I was like, no, why? He was like, the speed we have to work on, but the technique is incredible. And you're like, I didn't think like that I can see that from the first time I test you. I was like, yeah, we really did competitions and we were really in the national team. And I think he was very surprised. And then when we talked to him, we told him the story, we were smiling, like we weren't crying or we weren't hurt about it because it happened already. We tried to move on. And to us, it was something that was normal because thousands of refugees were going through the same thing from Syria. And that's not a good thing to think that this is something normal. But he was really surprised and he was like sitting in the corner. He didn't talk for a while. And then he asked me about my goals and I told him I want to go to the Olympics. And then we said, okay, we have to see how we're going to take care of it financially and how we're going to, like, he wants to help me. He wants me to go to the Olympics. And at the time it was the goal, you know, to represent Syria. And then the IOC started helping refugees and they said that there is a scholarship, which I applied for. And that was all of it. Like, I didn't know there was a refugee Olympic team. We didn't know anything. And then Sven, my coach, saw this interview of IOC president Thomas Bach talking about the first ever refugee Olympic team and saying, yeah, on this team, there will be a Syrian refugee, a swimmer in Germany. There will be a taekwondo player, let's say, in Congo. And the media went crazy at the time. We had 300 emails in one day because there was no other Syrian swimmer in Germany but me. And I was against it. I wasn't happy about it at all because like I was like, I do not want to swim because people feel sorry for me because of my story and what happened to me. I want to swim at the Olympics because I want to earn my spot. And the people who convinced me were really my sister and my mom and dad. My dad was like, I did not coach you my whole life for nothing. My mom was like, I come to the pool every day for 2 hours sitting on the stands for you to refuse to go. No, that's not gonna happen. And my sister also talked to me and Sven told me you're representing Syria when you represent the Olympic flag and it's an opportunity. And sometimes you have to take the opportunities or they might never come again. So that's when I realized I went, but I was not 100% sure about it, to be honest, even when I was at the Olympics. And the moment everything changed for me was the opening ceremony, walking into the stadium, just like watching everyone standing up for the team, watching how well of reception it was. Like, people really were so hopeful about this team. It was so diverse. We came from all around the world. We had different stories. We had different training possibilities. But in the end, we were all here for one thing, which is sport and the Olympics. And that's what the Olympics is about. That's what the Olympic spirit is.
I remember watching that opening ceremony in Rio and seeing the moment when the refugee Olympic team walked out. And it was just, like you say, everyone rallied around the whole team. And it really kind of emphasized what it means to be an Olympian. Against all odds, anything that is thrown at you, you keep fighting, you keep going, and you keep wanting to get to that dream. I understand the conflict you had in your head, whether you should want to hold out and like compete for Syria or just go and be part of that team. And I think the message that it sends to so many people around the world of being like, you know what, I have worked my butt off to get here and I deserve the chance to realize my dream. It must have been so special. Like, how did it feel that moment? Like you were saying, walking into the opening ceremony, it must have been just a dream.
I honestly, when I entered the Olympic stadium, I had one thought in my mind, and I was like, girl, it's not about you anymore. It's way bigger than you and your dreams, and it's about you being a voice. Like, I started realizing when I was giving interviews in Rio and I was talking about refugees and so on, I realized I can change something. Like, I can really change something. And people were listening to me, you know, continuing to dream with being different, with saying, hey, I'm a refugee, but here I am. Like, I did it. I made it too. So can you. And I do like proving people wrong sometimes. Like, you know, lots of people come and they're like, oh, you're a refugee. Don't look like a refugee. And I'm like, what is a refugee supposed to look like exactly? Like, yeah. Why do you have this idea that a refugee has nothing? Like, One of the things that I was asked when I got to Germany was, did you have a racing suit in Syria? Did you have a TV? I was like, you guys, it's one of the oldest countries in the world. We have more history than everyone. You have to read about it a bit. But yeah, these were questions that I was asked. Do you have an iPhone? I was like,
people are worried and scared and frightened of things that they don't know, things that they don't have an understanding of. And I think that's why you have been so incredibly important. And the Refugee Olympic team and the movie, the swimmer, all of it is adding up to this thing where it's making people understand that people that are having their normal lives, they don't want to be leaving their country, but they're forced out of their homes. Like you were saying, your mum used to be upset when you would leave because she didn't know if you would ever come back. Yeah. And like no 17-year-old at the time or anyone growing up should ever have to feel like that. And I think that's why it's so powerful for you to be an Olympian now. And I mean, from the Olympics, do you have like a favorite moment from either of the Olympics, Rio or in Tokyo?
Yeah. And by the way, just speaking, giving one last point about that, like, they give a chance to our food and they love our food. So they can give a chance to us too, you know.
Yes,
everyone
absolutely
loves Arabic food. But moments that I loved. At Rio, I loved everything, to be honest. I think I was too young to like just focus on one thing and like enjoy it. And I was like, oh my God, the swimmer and that and that. And I was like just running around. But to be honest, I have incredible memories in Rio. And one thing that I was so excited about, I think you know Florent Manadou. He's a French swimmer. And he was one of my idols since I was young. And then he asked me to switch caps. And I was like, hold on, wait, what? It was so exciting. And he did support me from day one, like since 2016 until now. We're friends. And I love that. Like, that's what sport is about, you know, just showing love and support. That was one moment. Other moments were, you know, just being able to speak to people and being able to see the other refugees in my team just getting the chance they deserve, speaking about their life experiences. My race, obviously, was also a highlight. To be honest with you, I was not happy with the time. I'm not going to lie. but the atmosphere, everyone, just like the crowds, I have never had a, you know, a big crowd like that. So I was like, don't look at the crowds, don't look at, look at the pool, try to focus. But it was incredible. And just, I saw also the last race for Michael Phelps. So that's also very, very special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly overwhelming, like you say, when you walk into the like a sea of people, like there's so many people all around and it's so loud. And I remember there was one particular moment where I was like, that was when I like completely lost it and I was a complete mess, was that moment when you were sitting with your sister, and this may or may not have happened, but that monologue of like what it means for you to be swimming and that you're not just swimming for you, you're swimming for all of the refugees around the world and anyone that's ever had a dream. And did your sister Sarah actually get to go to Rio and be there?
She did, and she came with Visa because they were the sponsor of the Refugee Olympic team. And she did tell me, oh, I flew business. I was like, okay, thanks. I flew economy.
I know they put the athletes in the toilets if they can, I swear.
I know. Oh my God, yes, they do. It was a really long flight to Rio, also Tokyo, the same. But yeah, she did come and she came on business and she was very excited. And I was very happy to have her because it was last minute. Yeah, she was going to Greece and then they brought her to me as a surprise. It was so amazing. We couldn't bring my parents because they didn't have any documents yet, but my sister was there. And also there was like a really special second moment for me of the Olympics in Tokyo where I carried the flag. I was nagging and telling everyone that would be like the biggest dream for me, and in Tokyo that happened as well. So it's all about manifesting, you know, and that was really a big moment for me as well to just represent the Refugee Olympic team and being 1000% proud of it and proud of who I am. I grew so much in the between the Olympics from Rio to Tokyo, and you can even see on my like face expressions and so on. You can't see a lot because of the mask, unfortunately. But I was very, very proud to represent this team. And at that time, I also qualified for Syria, by the way, for Tokyo. But I chose the Refugee Olympic team. And I chose the Refugee Olympic team because I wanted to represent millions around the world, including Syria. And I hope I did that. And now with the movie being out, it makes me really happy, to be honest.
That's amazing. I mean, what did your dad say as well after you swam at the Olympics? Like, and, you know, realize his dream. Like, I bet that was an interesting phone call.
You're going to be a little bit disappointed because my dad was like, you could have swum faster.
Oh,
Thanks, Dad. I mean, you can imagine. He's like coach in the end. Like, but no, he was like, he also said, have fun. It's not about swimming anymore. It's about, you know, obviously it's about swimming in terms of competition, but also have fun. It's not all the time. You need to, he said you went through a lot. And at this point, whatever you swim, whatever the time is, it's fine because you tried your best and you should enjoy your time, really. He told me even like, he said something mean. He was like, even Germans are not getting medals at the Olympics anymore, so you're fine. Like,
oh my gosh. That's,
I was like, okay. Well, because it's hard. It is hard. The competition is crazy. So he was like, you don't have to be hard on yourself. I was like, thank you.
Oh. And what is your relationship now with swimming? Because I understand that you're now not fully into the... Yeah. So what is swimming for you now?
I'm not gonna lie, like, I'm in the denial phase.
Yeah.
Did you ever had that?
Yes.
So I, between, okay, give it one more try and just enjoying my time with swimming and not giving any, like, not putting any limits on it or saying, okay, it's time for something new. I didn't swim for a while now, to be honest. And whenever I see a competition or I see someone swimming, I'm like, oh my God, I should be in the pool. Like, it breaks my heart that I'm not swimming. But I think it's also smart to know when to walk away and start something new. And I think now with the movie, and I'm starting my own foundation to help refugees worldwide, we should do a collaboration, you know.
Yes, anything I can do to help.
Definitely. And in general, the purpose, like, I'm still torn between, again, just giving it a one more try or not. I can say that I left swimming, but I'm still in denial about it. Does that make sense?
You know what? I totally, totally get you. I'm in that limbo now. I haven't been on a diving board since Tokyo. I don't know, like, do we go back? Do you not? Like, do you want to start exploring other things beyond your sport? And there's so much more to life, and you want to start living, and it's so it is like an incredibly difficult balance, isn't it?
It's
like,
it's home.
Yeah. And you know, you see these competitions, you're like, oh, I just want to go give it a go. Like, I want to be able to go back and get in the pool. And, you know, like, for example, today, this afternoon, I took my son to the diving pool to have a little play around, and I went just for fun. Is that something that you ever do? Do you ever just go into the pool and have you do?
Yeah.
So you're still swimming, kind of.
Yeah, so I'm at the University of Southern California. I don't know if you saw the pool. If you're ever in LA, let me know, because the pool is incredible.
I've been to that pool.
And it's an outdoor. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm there, I'm like, oh, I want to swim. There's sun. There's the pool, the blue water. But I'm doing gym. I'm going running, which is odd for a swimmer, I guess. But I love running. It's just, I think I'm exploring other areas as well. It's a bit silly, but I'm thinking about doing athletics, something with running, because I liked, when I was young, they wanted me to change to athletics, and I said no. So maybe, who knows?
We have to watch this space, because, like, and I know outside of sports, you're also a UN Goodwill Ambassador, right? And you were, like, youngest at the time?
Yeah, I was the youngest appointed, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Like, what are the kind of things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis with all of that stuff? And what advice would you give to any athlete in particular, I guess, but anyone that feels like they have a dream and that they feel like there's so many obstacles in the way that it's impossible for them? But, I mean, you're living proof that you should never give up on your dreams.
Thank you. So, yeah, with UNHCR, I visit camps. As example, like, we visited one of the largest camps in Jordan, and I talk to refugees. I listen to them and their stories, and I try to understand what they need and how can we help. I speak at high-level events such as World Economic Forum to also let people know how they can help refugees and to tell my story and to show there are also success stories. And if we help those people, we help refugees worldwide, we can make a difference. And I always say that, but a lot of people are like scared of refugees coming to their country and stealing their jobs or whatever. And I'm like, if you're good at your job, no one steals it from you. You know, it's just a fair opportunity. And in general, they're not doing anything bad. They want to work. They just want to have a safe place to grow up, to have their future life. And they don't want to be worried about their kids every time they leave the house. They don't want to, you know, the first years of war in Syria, it was like, oh, we won't go out. We'll stay home and close the door. And then the bombs starting, you know, falling on buildings. So we're like, even if you're in your bedroom, you might have lost your life too. So that's what we told my mom. We were like, whether we're here or outside, you know, it can happen. So you have to be okay with us going out. And yeah, in general, my advice, to be honest, is be stubborn, be passionate. If you're passionate about something, if you love something, you know, from the bottom of your heart, keep doing it. A lot of people will, you know, question your intentions. A lot of people will question your abilities, but you're the only one who can say if you can do it or not. And a lot of times our human nature tells us that we can't do it, but we can. And you always have to think about the positive things in a bad situation or any situation. And that's the thing that, you know, moved me forward in life the most. Whenever I had any situation in life, I tried to get one positive thing out of it. To be like, oh, here we are. I am in a camp. I'm in a camp right now. You know, I don't have a home. I left my country. I left my home and everything. But I have amazing people here with me, and I'm getting to know new people, and they're sharing their food with me. So I win, you know? Own who you are, work hard for your dreams, and, you know, do not listen to people, even if they're your close family. Listen to your, you know, heart and keep going until you are where you want to be.
I mean, those are some inspiring words. And at the end of the film, one of the things that shocked me was having seen your relationship with your sister grow and grow and strengthen, go through ups and downs and disagreements, but you got there. And then Sarah decides to go back to help other refugees and is facing a possible 25-year sentence in prison.
Yeah.
It's just like, what is that relationship like now? That must be terrifying, I imagine.
It did honestly change a lot for her, and it did change her a lot as well. Because, yeah, back, I think 4 years ago or 5 years ago, they put her in jail and some other people as well that were volunteering in Greece, and they charged them with things like fraud, smuggling, money laundering, lots of crazy things that my sister would never do. She was just helping people. She was translating, trying to get people out of the, you know, the water when they arrived. That's it. They're giving them blankets, helping them food. And after 3 months, we bailed her out. And until today, there is no trial. But yes, she can face her and the other people up to 25 years in jail. There's a petition that everyone can sign. There's an Instagram account called Free Humanitarians. And they deal with a lot of cases, not just my sister, but a lot of humanitarian cases and wrongfully jailed people. Honestly, we did, like, our relationship, me and my sister, drifted a bit because I was focusing a lot on the Olympics and swimming, and I never had time, and I wasn't really fair to my family. I wasn't seeing them a lot. And I think when COVID hit, I distanced myself more because I was afraid if I get COVID, I won't go to the Olympics. So I think you probably also experienced that. Like, all of us were isolated from training back home, home training, mask all the time. And I probably did not show enough love at the time, and our relationship drifted. But when we saw the movie together, our relationship got stronger, to be honest. And I realized that she's been there for me my whole life, and the same for her. And she is my rock, whether I like it or not. Yeah, we do have a lot of disagreements, but we know that it's a healthy thing.
And when you were saying about the petition, like, we'll put all of those links below in the description and everything, so people can go and check it out, because it's incredibly important. But before we get on to the Made with Love letter that I've asked you to write, I guess, is there any advice that you would give to anyone that wants to help refugees?
I think we as people have the power to change the government's minds, because there's a lot of pushback from that side. I think if we stand together, we can change something. We can let the government know that we want to welcome refugees in our countries. There is enough space for refugees here. And if you think about it, and if you look back to history, refugees were here since ages, and they're not coming only from Syria or Africa. They came from Europe too at a time. And the biggest example is what's happening with Ukraine right now. So I always say a refugee is a refugee no matter where they come from. We have to welcome them because those people need our help. And I'm not saying open the door for them and let them in your home, but there are so many things. As example, in Germany, there are organizations where German people can go out with a refugee and they teach them the language, they speak with them, and they can help them with the paperwork, as example. And it's as simple as that. Sometimes it's just as simple as, you know, going out once with a refugee and helping them with their paperwork or the language, or going out and getting a meal, just make them feel welcome. There are also a lot of incredible organizations such as Choose Love. I work with UNHCR. There is Give Best UK, as example. There are a few really, really good organizations there. There is one organization that I really love. It's called Epimonia, and they recycle the life jackets into bracelets. They recycle life jackets into phone covers, they put them on the hoodies. And I think that's also a reminder that refugees still exist. I obviously think that people can donate and educate themselves better, knowing that now it's a really, really, rough winter, and there are refugees and kids especially that are intense, and they need our help and our donations for sure.
It's also that thing of you never know when it could be you, like that moment you're saying about Ukraine.
Exactly.
And in Afghanistan, like there's so many places where you just never know when it's going to be you, and show that kindness is incredibly important. And I just want to say thank you so much for joining me. And before we go, I asked people on the podcast to write a letter to someone, a place or a thing that has made you with love. And I would love to hear yours. If you could first of all tell us who it is addressed to and fire away with your letter.
I honestly did not write it down. I'm going to go from the heart.
Great.
I love that, to go from the heart. And it is to swimming. Yeah, I just want to say thank you to swimming for giving me the biggest opportunities of my life, for introducing me to amazing people, and for teaching me never to give up, for teaching me that I'm going to fall so many times before I get up and be strong. And I also want to say thank you to swimming for letting me be at the Olympics and letting me be an Olympian. And also, the most important thing that I want to say is that swimming did save my life. And without being a swimmer, I don't know if I would have had the courage to cross the sea and be 3.5 hours in the water. Water is my element and is my home. And I think that helped me on the way to survive, of course. And when I did not have any home anymore and I was a stranger in a new country, the water was my home again, and I am forever thankful for that. Again, in Germany, the water did introduce me to so many people. Swimming did introduce me to so many people that are now my best friends, that are now my family. It taught me that I'm going to face a lot of challenges, but not giving up is definitely the solution. So really, I do owe my life to swimming, and I'm forever thankful that I'm a swimmer and athlete. Really, I do not regret a moment of swimming.
Oh, that is so beautiful to hear you talk about a sport like that. Like you say, it has taught you so much. It has taught you like the life skills that you can use in the pool, outside of the pool. And it gave you hope, and it gave you that dream to keep going and that passion. And I just think you are an incredible human being that has achieved so much against the greatest of odds, and your story is just so inspiring to so many people. And I urge everyone, like I said, to go watch the swimmers and take the time to look at some of the links below. But again, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to speak to you, and all the best with your studies as well in LA.
Thank you thank you so much for having me. It was lovely.
I want to say a big thank you to you as well for listening. Join me again next week on Made with Love, when I'll be chatting to another amazing guest about making the things they love a driving force in their lives. Made with Love was hosted by me, Tom Daly, and produced by Emma Roberts for Spiritland Productions. Our engineer today was Gareth Isles, and our assistant producer is Nadine Peters. I really hope you can join me next week, but in the meantime, don't forget to tap into the things that you love and whatever it is that brings you joy. I'll catch you next time.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.